There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
And that's how we get cranked up on a Thursday edition of Midday Mobile, live local talk over the next couple of hours. I'm glad you're here. Phone number, text line, 343-0106, 343-0106. Coming up on the show today, Brendan Kirby's going to join us. Also, with all the talk about measles, and we'll get into this story about measles nationally, some of the stats and what has shown up in the state of Alabama. Somebody with a confirmed case of measles coming through central and northern Alabama. We'll talk about that with the doctor. Focused on this measles, what do you call it? The return of measles. We'll get into that coming up at 12:30. Also, keeping our eye on the weather today with staff meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams, as those showers are out to our west, making their way in. A few showers actually getting into our area, but the heavier rain later on this afternoon and through this evening. 73 right now at our studios, and looks like that's probably where we'll top out, 74, 75 today. But another update from Dr. Bill. That's coming up at about 12:35. All right, plus your chance at, I just got the, could I give some of these away? You think so? All right, some Jim Gaffigan tickets. Who I was asking is my children. I'm going to explain something in just a second. The Jim Gaffigan Quality Time Tour coming to the Wharf Amphitheater Saturday, May 11th. Got a pair of tickets for you sometime between now and 2 o'clock, so stay close for that. That's all straight ahead, and we'll get into it. 343-0106, the text line. And, yes, we will talk Biden, and we will talk measles. Not necessarily in that order. And also, Brendan Kirby in hour number two to talk about a recycling story. I think it's interesting. What about recycling when it starts costing municipalities money? Not even a break even, no profit. What should they do? I'll get into that coming up. But yeah, I want to mention the fact. So the Sullivan children are here. I'm very excited. My daughter and my son are in studio with me on this National Take Your Children to Work Day. Now, I've got to ask this question. First of all, why is this not celebrated in the summertime? I'm not exactly sure why they have it. We are very lucky. My children are on spring break this week, so they can be in studio with me and helping out. Normally, they would be doing their job, which is going to school, but this week they got some spring break. But yeah, I don't know. Here's what they say. The rundown says, National Take Our Daughters and Sons to Work Day is recognized on the fourth Thursday in April every year. This annual event is an educational program in the United States and Canada where parents take their children to work with them for one day. It's a successor to Take Our Daughters and Sons to Work Day, Take Your Daughter to Work Day, which started in 2003, and then was expanded to include boys. Now, this is... Now, wait a second. Wait a second. So you were, it was just for daughters, and then... Yes, you quit dabbing over there. And then for the... then all of a sudden, the boys get... into this. Okay, well, here's, I'm told here from nationaldaycalendar.com, here's how you observe this day. So if you need to know, if you need to have some website, some page tell you exactly how to celebrate this day, this is what you do. All right, you bring your children to work. Thank you. That's really great insight. Employers are encouraged to invite employees to bring their children to work. Have your children get bored as they watch you do your job. And by the way, if you're setting your calendar for next year, it's April 23rd. But yes, so I have some backup. Finally, I've got some help here in studio as my son and daughter in studio for the next 2 hours on Midday Mobile. So it's going to be that kind of show. Y'all remember, and my son's now cabbage patching. So it's going to be good. It's going to be good. We'll get some pictures here in just a little bit. All right, let's talk Biden and the announcement, and want to get into that with you this half hour. As Joe Biden has entered the race. I don't think any big surprise. You know, this morning was the official announcement. We played some of the clips from his ad. This has been strongly telegraphed for the last 2 weeks, and heck, for the last 2 days, it's been, hey, Joe Biden's going to announce on Thursday. So he's in. And I will go back to, and I heard Mike Gallagher talking about it preceding this show. I agree with that. I think the probably the best challenge to Donald Trump right now is Joe Biden. But at the same time, let me point out that the fact that Joe Biden would be probably the Democrats' best hope in the general is why I don't think he stands much of a chance, maybe a chance. I'll say he has a chance for sure, but I don't know that he's going to be able to make it through the primary process. If you look how far left the Democrat field has moved, it takes somebody like Joe Biden, who's definitely a progressive and definitely liberal, and makes him seem like an old fuddy-duddy, right, compared to the other leftist rhetoric going on inside the Democrat Party. So what does this mean for Joe Biden? I mean, if he gets to the general, does he have a puncher's chance against Donald Trump, and does he make it? When we come back from the break, guess who has chimed in on this? Chris Christie has chimed in on this. Of course, Chris Christie, who has known what it's like to run against Donald Trump as a candidate for the Republican primary, is talking about Joe Biden's chances against President Trump in 2020. So we'll get to some of those cuts when we come back. Your calls and text as well. Remember, online, fmtalk1065.com. Check us out there. You can get everything from the online opinion poll question to the top three stories of the day to podcast information, weekend schedules, weekday schedules. All that waiting for you right now. Check it out. I'm coming right back. This is Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 1217 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile Thursday style. Hey, speaking of Thursday style, another great event happening at Cottage Hill Package. That's going on tonight, starting at 6 as Ghost Train Brewing Company's out for a free tasting from 6 to 8. Now, they're out of Birmingham, and Ghost Train's going to be out with Kelsey from Ghost Train to introduce some of their lineup of beverages to the market. How about their Boysenberry Smoothie Sour Ale, their Stout Side of the Moon Imperial Milk Stout, their Gulf Coast India Pale Ale, their Switchman Stash IPA, and their Kaleidoscope Kettle Sour Ale, to name a few. Of course, it's one of these great free events. Goes on from 6 to 8 tonight at Cottage Hill Package. Of course, while you're there, if you want to go and check out the selection of other craft beers, they've got thousands waiting for you, plus a great selection of fine wines, spirits, and that gigantic humidor at the front of the store that's measured like, I think it's probably twice the size of the first residence I ever lived in. It's twice the size of my first apartment, for sure. Check it out. Cottage Hill Package, of course, online, cottagehillpackage.com. Make sure to like them on Facebook, or tastier yet, see them in person, whether it's tonight from 6 to 8 or any other time at the corner of Cottage Hill and Hillcrest. All right, I mentioned at the beginning of the show that today's National Take Your Child to Work Day, and my children, lucky for me, this has happened in the past, but it's always been, you know, like during school. I really am not sure why this holiday is not set during the middle of summer when children are not in school, but it isn't. But it worked out this year, scheduling-wise. My children are on spring break, and I'd like to welcome the Sullivan children into the studio. How are you?
We're good. Hello.
See, there we go. So
hello there.
They're right. That's my son there and my daughter there, and y'all are in the studio. You have, I don't think in all the years you've been in studios and radio studios with me over all your lifetime, but y'all have never been in studio when I was doing a show. Is this right?
Yes,
I just
sir.
Now finally got to where I can trust y'all with this, right?
Yes, sir.
So, looking at a couple things here. First of all, I'm learning something new here from my daughter. We were talking during the news break, news coming, continuing to come out of Sri Lanka about the attacks over the Easter holiday, and you told me, this is, my daughter told me that it's pronounced how?
Sri Lanka.
And I said Shri, and I should have said Shri. So all of you on the text line that busy yourself and on the, you know, and making corrections second by second to the show, don't worry. Y'all wonder why I'm nonplussed by this. I get it 24/7 from the family. So I said, so any of y'all like me said Sri Lanka. That's not right. It's Sri.
It's Sri Lanka.
Sri Lanka.
Yes,
so
sir.
Sri, eh, not E. So yes, it's not, sir. It's Sri Lanka. Okay, learning new things. Let me check in with my son here. Did I mess anything up that you can think of in the last segment?
No.
Okay, good. You're working that excellent, excellent angle to be the favorite. You know that. That's how it's done. And listen, when you call in today, we may have the Sullivan children take your phone calls at 343-0106. And if you have to work out any pronunciations of island nations, you know, half a world away, they can help you out with it. All right, when it gets to, y'all going to, children, you going to hold on with me?
Yes,
yeah, because you don't have your own car. Of course you will. You'll be here for the next 2 hours. Let's run to this Chris Christie story before we run out of time before the news break here. And a story from Mediaite. Chris Christie says white working class Trump voters could hand 2020 election to Joe Biden. Wow, sounds like something I said 6 months ago. And not just me, but lots of other people. Story reads this way. Former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie said that Joe Biden has the best chance to best Donald Trump in the field of 20 Democrats running for president in 2020. Christie argued the former vice president's appeal to white working class voters has made him most electable. Quote, someone who could give Trump a run is Joe Biden, Christie said, while on journalist Tina Brown's podcast, TBD, this week. Quote, I say that is because in the essence of the 2016 election that was decided by 80,000 voters in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, and most of those voters are white working class voters, end quote. Y'all, he's referencing the Rust Belt states. Goes on to say, I think if you look at the 19 candidates on the side of the aisle, the one who can best have an opportunity to appeal to those white working class voters is Joe Biden. He added, okay. That's kind of like conventional logic. I don't think, you know, that's not the hottest of hot takes there from Chris Christie. Of course, Christie, who was a GOP candidate in the 2016 election, who dropped out and threw his support behind President Trump relatively early, also argued that there's no, quote, effective way to run against Trump right now from inside the Republican Party, end quote. Pretty interesting that he points it out. I think that's an honest assessment, but it's, you know, one that dare not be spoken. The former governor believes Joe Biden can still win by appealing to the same set of voters that Trump won over to beat Hillary Clinton in 16. Christie said, quote, his best argument is electability. If Biden can make it through the primaries, ding, 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 y'all, that's what we're about to talk about. He is the one Democrat candidate who appeals to the white working class voters and who handed the election to Trump and could hand 2020 to Biden instead. Biden, who has stayed in first or second place throughout early primary polling, has not officially, until this morning, announced his candidacy. Even before he announced, Biden's been number one on this list. Okay, maybe sometimes two. Some of the things Chris Christie says are just conventional logic. Some of them are maybe an interesting take from somebody inside, and some of them, I think, are wrong. And this idea that I do believe Biden's the biggest challenge to President Trump. I also don't think all the normal players will line up behind Biden. If you think about what Biden's done before, and Biden's run for this office before, right? But the electorate was different then, and the choices were different. And I think it's a little more balkanized than that. And that's why I say I agree with the premise here, and it's not like not anybody else has said this, but I agree with the premise that Joe Biden is the biggest challenge for President Trump in 2020. Difference is, I don't know that Joe Biden gets through the primary process. I want to hear from you on this. I know y'all got some takes on this, but you look at the field and how far left so many in the field of Democrats have gone. Can Joe Biden garner enough votes? Now, so we're going to the stats here in a second, but can he garner enough votes to beat out a Kamala Harris? Can he beat out a... Can he get enough... I mean, let's just look at, can he get to that 20 something percent? Can he do something here to make himself impervious to attacks that, you know, will come out? Is he able to sustain this for the long term. Because the stats coming out, Morning Consult poll as of today, an article says, as former Vice President Joe Biden enters the race for the Democratic presidential nomination, he's doing so as a front runner, polling ahead of both fellow Democrats and President Donald Trump. The new Morning Consult Politico poll, conducted April 19th through 21st, among 1,992 registered voters, found Biden leading the president by 8 percentage points in a hypothetical matchup, 42 to 34%. Biden has a significant edge over Trump among women with 17 points, millennials 22 points, and independents 10 points. Okay, well, I mean, let me point out, you just went through the fabric of a lot of the Democrat Party, except obviously for the independents. The National Online Survey has a two-point plus or minus margin of error. Trump's garnering nearly one-third of the vote in the early head-to-head test pales in comparison to that of the last incumbent president. At this point in the 2012 election cycle, then-President Barack Obama led Republican Mitt Romney by several points, polling consistently in the mid to high 40s, even after the 2010 Tea Party wave and backlash to Obamacare, or as they call it in the Morning Consult, Affordable Care Act, which fine too. Along with his advantage over Trump, Biden has held a consistent lead in the Morning Consult's weekly tracking among likely Democrat primary voters. 3 in 10 of those voters said the Delawarean was their top pick in the latest poll. Did I pronounce that correctly? Delawarean? Was that okay? Yes. Is that okay? Okay, good. Just making sure that was a good pronunciation. All right. Followed by 2.4% who chose Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. Biden's 6-point advantage is similar to his average 7-point lead over the Democrat Socialist in 12 tracking polls. All right. In the prominent states holding early nominating contests, y'all, this is where it all starts, right? In straw poll country, Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, and Nevada, Biden's lead over Sanders is currently larger, 34% to 26%, though the responses carry a larger margin of error, 5 points compared to 1 point in the broader sample. So the question would be there, you look through that, and they said, well, in this matchup, Biden against Trump, look at him, and this is according to one poll, we know how that works. One poll, and this one poll shows that he does well, Biden does well against Trump. But what it takes out of it, yes, you put Biden head-to-head with Bernie Sanders, he beats him. But what if you take the rest of that field and have you split off Elizabeth Warren supporters? You put Buttigieg in the mix. And yes, that's why I'm now taking the call on him, Buttigieg. But Buttigieg in the mix. You put the Maddox who got in. What if you got Elizabeth Warren in the mix? Now you've split that vote so many times, and that's what you do in a primary. So I think while the information rolled out in this is accurate, you know, obviously it's got a poll here, it's accurate. This is it's overly simplifying the Democrat primary system. I mean, you have Biden coming in, obviously, 8-point lead, all those things are vetted out in this poll, but they just completely don't take into account the fact that you have a bunch of other players running for that office, and I think that list will continue to grow. All right, we'll grab some calls and text at 343-0106, 343-0106. Yeah, so Taxman, I'm reading it, that Biden has heavy baggage. At the same time, do you think that most of that baggage has now been in play and vetted, right? I mean, look at when people got serious that he was considering getting in. You saw the Oppo research came out on Biden. I wonder if it's not all, everything's not always out there, but Joe Biden he's a known commodity. I don't know how many more things you could roll out with so many junior, and I mean junior, some of them younger folks vying for the Democrat nomination. There may be a whole horde of things that could be rolled out against them. The one thing, though, Taxman from the text line, and you can text us at 343-0106, the one thing I've seen that's really working against Biden today is not a piece of Oppo research, but an endorsement. All right. From Fox News, Liam Quinn posts this today. Joe Biden has already picked up a big name endorsement. Look at this. Biden, I mean, he's just out today with the ad. It's now official. He's in. He's picked up a big name endorsement. Y'all want to guess who it is? My children who are in studio for this National Take Your Children to Work Day. Any idea who might have endorsed former Vice President Joe Biden? Anybody? No? No ideas? No ideas?
No, sir.
Okay.
What does that mean?
All right. Wait, I don't know what it means either, son. It is. The former vice president who formally announced his bid this morning can count on the support of Michael Avenatti, the disgraced lawyer, Michael, and I won't, because my children are here, I won't go into depth of what Michael Avenatti did in the lawyering world, but his tweet this morning from Michael Avenatti: I'm extremely happy that at Joe Biden has decided to enter the race. He offers Dems the very best chance in 2020, especially in key states. He has the fight, intelligence, and fortitude to beat Trump and begin to make America America again. He has my enthusiastic support. So there you go. So who has stepped up big for Joe Biden? That would be Michael Avenatti. By the way, is Michael, is he, oh, he's out on bond. I was just seeing if he was, by the way, Avenatti could face up to, I think it was 335 years in prison, according to federal investigators. Just thought I'd point that out. But he's, hey, he's up early. He's tweeting his support for former Vice President Joe Biden. All right, 1230, we'll run to the news break and check in with staff meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams and talk about our forecast and these storms moving in from the west. And as promised, when we come back, now we're having a conversation that I really hadn't been ready for, a discussion of measles in the United States. New numbers coming in have almost 700 cases nationally. Also, a report from just earlier last week, a confirmed measles case coming through the state of Alabama. What it's all about, we're going to talk about the measles. We're going to talk about what it looks like, what it sounds like, and what you can do to protect yourself when we return.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:36, and it is FM Talk 106.5. Mentioned on the morning show today, 675 earlier this year cases of measles. Now with some new numbers coming out of New York City, 695 cases just in 4 months of 2019. And we started talking about this morning, reading through the stories, and y'all lit up the text line and the emails with questions about measles. I gotta be frank with you, I didn't have really a single answer here, as people were asking questions about immunization and vaccines and longevity there. But lucky for us, there are people that study this and know. And if you've got a question here about your measles shot and are you still protected, and questions about what seems to be a new issue globally and here in the United States, we're lucky to have a guest on who studies this. I don't know if I can say he studies it every day. Eyal Amiel from Vermont, right? University of Vermont.
Yep, that's correct.
And what's it say on the front of the office there? What are you doing every day? It's immunology, or what's your specialty?
I have a PhD in immunology and microbiology. I study the immune system in my laboratory and teach courses on infectious disease.
See, this is like when we tell you kids the science, technology, engineering, and math, that's what this man does. And in this case, dealing with what is really, instead of talking to you about some brand new, you know, some kind of disease, some kind of virus that's brand new on the scene, we're talking about a classic here, right? And measles.
Absolutely. Something that's been infecting humanity for thousands of years, and something that we've been fighting from a public health standpoint for hundreds of years.
I guess I'm happy that I'm ignorant about it, because I haven't seen it in my lifetime or been an issue, you know, when I haven't seen somebody with measles that I knew of. So can you describe to folks listening right now what it looks like? What would symptoms look like? What would somebody with measles look like?
Sure. So measles begin, it's a respiratory virus, so it's akin to influenza, in that you would contract it from breathing in air that had viral particles. So you can get it from coughing and sneezing, and it can remain in the air. It can remain in the environment for hours after somebody has coughed in the air. And one of the things that's really remarkable about measles is that it infects about 90% of people who come into contact with it if they're unvaccinated. So it's one of the most highly infective contagious diseases that we know of. It begins by looking something fairly flu-like. Symptoms typically begin with high fever, cough, runny nose, red and watery eyes. A few days after the symptoms begin, patients typically present with tiny spots in their mouth. And then a classic rash erupts and descends from the head downward throughout the body. And patients are contagious about 4 days before and after a rash appears.
Hearing this, and if you're just joining us, talking to Dr. Amiel from the University of Vermont and talking about measles, why 90-something percent infection rate? I mean, that's pandemic stuff, right? I mean, if it starts spreading in a unvaccinated population, I mean, it pretty soon has everybody. I don't know how you hide from that.
Absolutely. I think that that's one of the reasons why we see, you know, one, that the Centers for Disease Control is concerned about the resurgence of measles in this country, and number two, why public health efforts are trying to be so aggressive about vaccination, because all it takes is the right combination of events of the virus being introduced into a cluster of unvaccinated people, and it can lead to these large localized outbreaks, and hopefully we can avoid outbreaks that extend beyond these localized pockets.
Yeah, and I want to talk about that, because some of the numbers from the Centers for Disease Control talking about, you know, almost 700 cases so far, and that if you, you know, so far in 2019, but you talk about localized, and I did hear them talk about it. How localized, is it certain communities that haven't been vaccinated, localized just because of geography? Explain that to us.
It's a little bit of a combination. I think that our best understanding right now of how measles is being introduced into these communities, it's typically being introduced by individuals who are unvaccinated and are traveling out of the country into areas where measles is more prevalent. And these infectious people are coming back. And if they happen to be in contact with people who either are not protected due to lack of immunization or are immunocompromised, for example, then the disease takes hold. So about 80%, 80 to 90% of these 700 or so people that have been infected so far this year are categorized as either known to be not vaccinated or have an unknown vaccination history. And there's about 10% of individuals where the vaccine hasn't given them full coverage and have also come down with the measles. So, but the data are skewed very highly towards people who are unvaccinated, and that's what we're trying to prevent with public efforts towards measles vaccination.
It's, you know, of course, it's come back up as a discussion because of, you know, the anti-vax movement and some of those out there. But generally, I don't think, you know, I'm actually have my children in the studio with me today. They were vaccinated. I was vaccinated. Everybody I knew was vaccinated for it. So it is, you know, all of a sudden kind of an eye opener that the number of people out there that aren't vaccinated. It's and there are some people for religious reasons or those that didn't get vaccinated. Am I right on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So in New York State, for example, Orthodox Jewish community is one of the communities that has chosen invoking religious reasons not to vaccinate. So some members of that community. But I think the good news is New York has been fairly aggressive about mandating vaccines or telling people that if they're not vaccinated, they can't be in public spaces. And as a result of that, I think that even within that community, we're seeing the changing of minds when people are vaccinating their children. I think that one of the really interesting things about this issue is people who are pro-vaccine choice, also dubbed anti-vaxxers, it's a privilege to be able to choose not to vaccinate, and it's a privilege only afforded by the fact that most people vaccinate. And so we live and have lived in a society where measles is not commonplace. In fact, the United States declared measles eradicated in the country in 2000, meaning that there hadn't been an active case of infection for an entire year. And what allows this to creep back up and enter our society is the coupling of the high infectious rate plus condensed communities where certain people choose not to vaccinate. And it's a privilege to say, I don't want measles. Historically, when measles was everywhere, people were relatively happy to sign up and do it, but our memories are short.
Yeah, just joining us, talking to Dr. Eyal Amiel, and we're talking about this measles return. And Doctor, okay, if this is a lot of the questions that drove us to reach out to you today, and I'm looking at them again on our text line coming in, let's talk about that vaccination and, you know, that, well, the herd immunity, but the vaccination that so many of us have, you know, does it last? Is it for your whole life? When somebody's asking me, do I need to get a booster? Can you walk us through the science there?
Sure. So most people have received the MMR as part of their childhood vaccine schedule.
And MMR is what?
Measles, mumps, and rubella. So it's has three protections within a single vaccine. And the measles part of that vaccine is actually thought to provide lifelong protection. There's pretty good data that the protection you get from the measles vaccine lasts a very long time, up to a lifetime. And the data on it from the Centers for Disease Control is that a single dose of the vaccine protects 93% of individuals, and a second dose, which is what's the recommended schedule by the CDC, provides 96 to 97% protection, which means that pretty close to 100% of individuals who receive both recommended doses are protected for life. In addition, people who acquired measles naturally and were able to fight it are also considered to have lifelong protection. And in that vein, the CDC recommendation is that people get their measles vaccine if they don't know that they've been vaccinated, if they were born in 1957 or later. And the reason for that recommendation is that it's assumed, based on survey data, that 95 to 98% of individuals born before 1957 were naturally exposed and have that lifelong protection as a result of natural exposure.
Oh, wow. Okay, so with the 57 cutoff, those people have this natural immunity. But after 1957, you can assume, I mean, I guess, can you go back and check records on that to see if you had it, or?
Yeah, so you can go back and check records. I think that if you are uncertain about your vaccine status, it's worthwhile beginning that conversation with your doctor, your primary care physician. And there are actually tests that can be performed that can allow your doctors to determine whether or not you have protection against the measles.
This is an interesting question. We're talking about this, that people that in these communities where they had not been vaccinated in the past were kind of, am I correct in saying, kind of protected by those of us that had, right? I mean, because the people around them were vaccinated for it, and so therefore there wasn't measles in play for those people.
That's right. So this notion of herd immunity is that there's, and it really depends on different characteristics, which I can address in a second, but the idea is that there's a threshold where if the population is vaccinated above some threshold, let's say it's 85%, then what we've done is we've reduced the probability that a given contagion can actually spread from person to person, and we call that herd immunity because it means that the 15% in our hypothetical example that haven't been vaccinated are effectively protected by the immunity given by the people who do vaccinate. Now, that number changes and is driven primarily by a number of different factors, but primarily by the infectivity. And so measles, which is one of the most contagious infections that there is, requires a much higher threshold for population herd immunity than other diseases. And that's why, even though we have pretty good vaccine compliance, we do see the ability of it to take hold in pockets and communities where people aren't highly vaccinated.
So in this equation that leads us to this new reality here for measles back in play, the people that were not vaccinated part of it and traveling and bring it back in, is that because people are asking where'd the measles come from? How's it back? Has it always been here and that herd immunity has been protecting? Or are there new, is it flush now with people that are positive for measles coming into the country, traveling, whatever? What do you see in your research?
I think that we do know that if we compare the first 3 months of 2019 to the first 3 months of 2018, we can. The World Health Organization estimates that the rate of global measles infection has tripled. So,
wow.
The intense efforts nationally is to try to prevent continuous infection cycle within the United States. So far, what we've seen is isolated travelers bringing it in. I think that the New York epidemic was initiated by an infected individual from Michigan, actually, who came into contact with a number of unvaccinated individuals. What we're really trying to do is prevent a naturally recurring person-to-person in U.S. transmission cycle, which is possible, but if we're really keeping an eye on these outbreaks, then hopefully we can prevent that from happening. So I think the increase is two factors. One is that there's more globally, so travelers are more likely to come into contact with it. And secondly, because we have steadily year by year increasing numbers of people who are choosing not to vaccinate and for decades have been okay with not vaccinating against measles if they use the line of argument, well, it's not here in the U.S.
Right.
Now it is. And so those two factors combined make this a perfect storm of sorts, which has public health professionals seriously concerned.
Okay, and not to, you know, we're not in the fear-spreading business, but I am in the fact-spreading business. You said it has the community concerned here. I mean, what could this look like? How bad could this get?
Sure. So in the majority of people, the disease is self-limiting, which simply means that patients will get a rash and they'll feel bad for a number of days, and eventually they'll get better. But the statistics, and this may sound like a low number, but it's actually quite high. 1 in 1,000 individuals who get the measles are projected to have encephalitis, which is inflammation of the brain that often leads to permanent brain damage. And in children, who are the most susceptible to this disease, 1 to 2 per 1,000 infections historically results in death. And we don't have great post-infection treatment. And so it really stands that vaccination is the single best preventative measure that we have in the public health arena to prevent this disease.
All right. And so many questions coming in, but I'm going to try to lump them into groups here, and we're going to have you kind of repeat things you've already said, but I'm getting new questions on this. And if you're just joining us, obviously it's a discussion of the measles and the CDC stats that have almost 700 cases here in the first 4 months of 2019 in the United States, and talking to Dr. Eyal Amiel out of the University of Vermont. Let's talk about this once again. So adults, break it down again. 57, if you're born in 57 or earlier, you should have be immune because of exposure?
Slight modification of that. So before 1957, the CDC considers that 95% of individuals born before 1957 were probably exposed to it naturally because it was that prevalent in society. And so those individuals don't necessarily need to get vaccinated. The CDC recommends that anyone born in 1957 or later should have a documented two-shot series of the measles vaccine. That's the recommendation. And then once you have that, you are protected for life, or 96 to 97% of the individuals are protected for life.
Okay, people born after that period with the vaccines, it would be, if people are not sure, they should search the records. What if they cannot find record of that immunization? What's the process there? Do you go as an adult and get this MMR?
Absolutely. The CDC does recommend that adults who are uncertain or know that they haven't gotten the vaccine should be vaccinated against the measles. And that's as simple as talking with your physician or going to a clinic and saying, I don't know my status. And there's a couple of things that can happen. There's no necessary danger in getting, let's say, another shot of the measles if you think you've had one but don't know if you had your second. And on the other hand, in situations where you'd like to find out, it is possible for physicians to test and see whether you have measles protection.
Oh, good. Okay, so
typically the less expensive option is simply to get the shot.
And then a question here, as you mentioned, that tripling of measles cases globally, that has a lot of people worried here, asking questions about people coming into the United States and, you know, maybe from people traveling to other countries versus coming in from other countries. What are there not vaccination standards elsewhere? Like, for example, they're asking about southern border, Mexico. Do they have the same vaccination standards we do here for MMR?
Oh, I don't actually know the answer to that question about international, the nuances of international law for measles. But I would say that because of the way the vaccines protect us, and because our immune systems are usually really good at fighting things that we've been previously exposed to, if you are traveling and are up to date on your vaccines, it is very unlikely that you would be able to come back and infect somebody else. Meaning that if you're protected from the vaccine, you're also protecting the herd, and that you're unlikely to ever be able to transmit the disease as well.
And then this is kind of what this question kind of off what you were talking about earlier. You talk about the getting the shot again. This person termed it a measles booster shot. Is that the same thing we were just talking about, or is that different?
So in vaccinology, a booster shot refers to a dose after the first dose. So typically what happens is the principle behind vaccines is that we intentionally expose our bodies to information about the disease, and our immune system remembers it. We call that a memory immune response. And so after you see something once, you have this standing army of immune cells, if you will, that are specifically tailored to what you saw, and they hang around and wait for a secondary exposure. And so after you see something once, you have a memory response. But every time you see a particular molecular signature of a virus, for example, your immunity gets even better. And so these prime boost vaccine regimens, as we call them, where you get one dose and then you get a second dose or a third dose, those second and third doses are called boosters because what they're literally doing is boosting the level of immunological memory that you have against that particular pathogen.
And so this is maybe something that'll be new, that people in this country will go back maybe as adults and do these. I mean, you're not saying that's necessary, but it seems like that may get some more attention here.
Absolutely. And if you really are uncertain about your vaccine status, this is the best thing you could do to protect yourself and those around you. And I think that it's worth mentioning that there are people in our society, people that we love, who cannot be vaccinated. Very, very small babies and people who are immunocompromised and whose immune systems don't work properly. And those are the people who benefit the most from herd immunity. Because they cannot be vaccinated, they in essence rely on those of us who can to be vaccinated to protect society from these dangerous contagious infections.
Well put. Dr. Meehl, thank you for your time. Thanks for being on, educating us on this. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. I really enjoy and value this important public conversation.
There you go. Dr. Eyal Amiel from the University of Vermont. And maybe the questions, it looks like we answered a lot of them from the text line, you might have had about the stats coming out from CDC on these cases of measles. Listen to this once again. I mean, this is, now you compare this to a lot of other things and issues that plague people in the United States. That's one thing. But this is so foreign for so many years when we're talking about almost 700 cases. Well, it looks like it is. Seven, right now, the CDC saying pretty darn close, maybe 699 or something like that. So let's say close to the 700 case mark in 2019 so far, four months in here in April. And compare that with the highest year in the past. The recent past was 400 cases, 667 in 2014. And then before that, the highest case in the last century was 400 number of cases. So obviously this is on the way up, something we, I don't believe in trying to fear monger or make everybody, run wild like we're in a Godzilla movie. But at the same time, this is information you need going forward. All right, we come back from the break. We'll be joined by Brendan Kirby from Fox 10 TV. Pretty interesting article or story he has up at fox10tv.com about recycling and the cost of recycling here along the Gulf Coast. What used to be a moneymaker, actually, you put your recyclables in those boxes, the plastic boxes, and it would make money for a private entity or a municipality. Now it's costing. They're at best break even, but looks like it's costing. What's the future of that? Is it worth doing? We'll continue that conversation when we come back right here on Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. Where I'll have the guidance of my children who are in studio for this show for the first time ever live. This is pretty cool. I'm liking it. They're, kids, you good? You good? Yeah, you sure having fun? Okay, coming right back.